We don't think we haven't even talked about the next goal yet. Jesus Christ on a bicycle.
That's just all we have to do for that is play Yakety Sax, and the conversation is
the last one, yeah.
Tech Hockey Guide presents the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, covering the Michigan Tech Huskies and the CCHA with your host, Tim Brown, Rob Gilreath, Dustin Lindstrom, and Matt Cavender.
Welcome to episode 47 of season 5 of the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, presented by Tech Hockey Guide and recorded from the state of hockey. I'm Tim Brown, your host, and I'm joined this week by Dustin Lindstrom.
Hey, everyone.
Rob Gilreath.
Hey, guys.
And Matt Cavender.
You already know who it is, and the Stonehill women are NCAA tournament bound, baby.
You're going to just keep derailing me and cause me to never introduce the guest now, aren't you, Matt?
Yeah.
Is that going to be a thing? All right.
I just want to see if you can. I want to see if you can remember to introduce the guest every time.
With the Mason Cup championship upon us in Bemidji, we reached out to Jared Ribeiro from the Bemidji Pioneer to discuss the CHA. Thanks for joining us again, Jared.
Yeah, thank you. I'm 1 week removed from a riveting Limp Bizkit conversation, which I'm a little bummed. I grew up a professional wrestling fan, so like,
oh man, this would have been a great episode.
Songs, like break stuff, roll. I could have really chimed in there. So
is this a third consecutive backwards hat week? Is that what we're looking at?
All right. So how many song titles did you find in Jack's preview?
So, the problem with that is like, I can't even call myself a Limp Bizkit fan. Okay. It's just whatever they put on like 1990s WWE pay-per-views. But I found a couple in there, but I know like five or six total Limp Bizkit songs. And look, no one's given them any Grammys for it, but like, yeah. you can have a good time.
No, it was a fun discussion last week, and we can thank Paul Durst again for that. Let's see. This week we'll talk about the Bemidji win, Michigan Tech finding the craziest way to survive. And then Jared has some questions about MTU Broomball, apparently. And I'm sure we'll talk about pairwise complications for the CCHA winner, or at least potential ones, depending on how things fall in the rest of the games this coming weekend. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I'm just hoping I stay awake. I got up at 4:30 for work today, so it's been a long day.
All right. We'll be right back with Jared Ribeiro after a little thank you notes and a brief note from our sponsor. Are you in the market for insurance? Have your rates for home, auto, boat, or more been increasing way beyond inflation? If so, maybe it's time you spoke with Aaron Pietola and the team at Arcadia Insurance Group. Serving Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and more. Who better to serve you than a former Michigan Tech player? For more information, call 866-511-1069 or go to arcadiaagency.com.
Do you work in manufacturing, product design, or product development? Is your business trying to improve efficiency while also producing at scale? Livonia Technical Services can help. They provide world-class quality improvement training and consulting for failure modes and effect analysis, product development, and cost reduction. All things that could help Northern Michigan assemble a competent defense. If you think your business could use a prevention mindset and reduce manufacturing costs, a partnership with Livonia Technical Services might be right for you. Check them out at livoniatech.net. That's LIVONIA tech.net.
All right, welcome back, Jared. I guess we might as well get into the Michigan Tech game and all the fun happenings of finding all sorts of different ways to put in a puck without directly shooting it into the net with a stick, right?
Yeah.
So Michigan Tech found a way to win a game that they never led until 9.5 seconds were left on the clock, or didn't lead until 9.5 seconds left on the clock. I know... watching on my screen that the first period was that typical frustrating Michigan Tech hockey period where you feel like you outplayed the team thoroughly and you go into the locker room losing.
That's been a reoccurring theme this year for Tech. You come out hard, don't score any goals, lots of shots that maybe aren't the highest of quality, but are decent flurries in front of the net and just don't bury it. And then, you know, that Sauter that comes down and, you know, first shot right over top. Vaharatio plays it well on D. He's got the pass blocked on the 2-on-1, leaves the shooter for the goalie to handle. And, you know, he just beats Blake on their first shot of the game and we're down 1-0. So yeah, that's a frustrating recipe that I think we followed a little bit too often this year.
But yeah, definitely.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say, it definitely felt like it was one of those games where I was like, this is going to be one of those times where I need to stay out of the Discord because I know it's going to be miserable. Everyone's going to be sitting there about like, oh, we can't buy a goal. This team's washed. We can't do anything. So I had to stay out for a good bit of that one. But yeah, things just seemed to keep rolling Tech's direction. Just the most wild finish to a hockey game I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing to take away was that in spite of the first period and what has been a theme all season is, and I think Joe has touched on this a lot, like maybe they haven't always been able to stick with systems or play the way Joe maybe wants to, but I haven't seen this team quit all year. And they kept trying and kept working and they never gave up and things started to go their way, whether it's by the book as read by people in Minnesota or not. And we might as well get into that because that's where the scoring happened. But the first thing I wanted to do here was look at Michigan Tech. Where's the... So yeah, so two of Michigan Tech shots in the first period were like high quality scoring chances. Two more were misses. So it's not like that, like... That's pretty honest. That's pretty good, honestly, for the amount of shots taken that they had that in the first. So, and yeah, I think if I remember correctly, Jay-Z pointed out that like none of Minnesota State's goals came on like high percentage shots.
No, they were all like, I wouldn't say high percentage shots. They were all decent, good, like snipes, really well skill shots that.
Yep.
You know, don't necessarily go in every time or aren't high expected to go in. But, you know, the guy shooting it, they were quality. I mean, Sauter's shot was an awesome snipe. I think it was is it Isley. I don't know how you say his name, actually. I'm not sure.
Isley.
Isley's goal was between the legs of the defender. So, you know, a little blind shot there for I don't think Blake picked it up very well going through the legs. I don't remember what Hillman's goal was the rebound where – somebody got absolutely skinned on the left-hand side of the ice, gave him a free and clear shot, and it just rebounded right to Hillman's stick. So Mankato scored nice goals. We scored shit show goals.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
happened to have four of them.
One of the things that I wanted to look at was because Jay-Z pointed out that all three of Minnesota State's shots were like less than 10% chance of going in. So I just pulled
even,
up.
Even the rebound goal?
All three of the pucks that actually went in were like, I think that one might have been like 8%.
That's got to be, I mean, maybe I don't know how they judge it, but
I think it's because of
pretty...
the, like, even though it was a rebound, none of all the shots happened from inside the right faceoff circle. So it's still not like uber close. But anyway,
yeah, but there was a lot of net to shoot at because Blake was flailing to try to get over.
I don't think where the goalie is plays into it at all.
Okay,
how they come
up
with the numbers. It's more about what the odds of scoring from that spot on the ice is.
Gotcha. I would say that one should be a higher percentage. If you do an actual, if the analysis was based on actual watching a video, that one would be a relatively high probability shot because he's got a wide open net as Blake tries to come across. And Pedersen had a good chance similar to that as well, but the puck just wasn't settled. It was off the ice and it bounced over his skate on a big rebound. Where Hillman's, it was a gift. Like I could have scored it. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tech had six shots that were at least a 10% chance of going in, which I guess, so five, because one of them, they're counting the penalty shot. And then, and one of them went in, and then Minnesota State had three total shots, two of which were on net that were that high a probability. Not a lot of quality chances provided to Minnesota State, but they managed to make the most of theirs.
We don't usually, you know, go through and review the goals, but I think this week is one where it's worth it because of how
really what happened.
Just ridiculous they are. I honestly, I'm still not sold on the works goal, whether it's a goal or not. I'm curious what Jared's thoughts are on it from an outside perspective. Have you seen it? I'm assuming.
Yeah, I watched that whole game.
Sure.
Every replay of it.
Well, let's stop right there. I thought that was brilliant by the CCHA to stagger them like they did, so we could watch both.
Yes. Agreed. If we wanted. That was awesome.
Yeah,
that's the 100%. Way to do it.
Even though I missed time the drive from my apartment to the Sanford Center and missed the first 7 minutes of the third period, that's a swing and a miss because I missed two goals on a 10-minute drive. Good one.
And they were my two favorites.
I think I want to preface my thoughts on it by I did not give a rip who won that game. I thought both teams would have provided Bemidji State the same level of toughness in terms of a head-to-head in the Mason Cup title game. I think Michigan Tech's a more talented team than Minnesota State, but Minnesota State kind of has like the boogeyman feeling for a lot of teams in this league for good reason.
What it was because they've kicked all of our asses for the last few years.
And not only that, but there's like a separate revenge factor for Minnesota State after getting the piss beat off of them like two weekends ago. So it would have been really tough. And especially with the way Alex Tracy played, because he played really good in all of these playoff games that he played.
Can't save stuff off his helmet. I'm on him. What else does he want to do?
Right. To me, everything goes back to the works goal. Everything. Because without the works goal and the works challenge, then you challenge the other one. And I get that you could have challenged it again with the risk of a penalty, but we'll get to that. The works goal is fascinating to me because one thing is clear, or there's two things that are up for debate. The first is the kicking motion, right? Did he have a distinct kicking motion? And I think most people would lean towards, yes, there was a distinct kicking motion. But the word, the one word in the definition is propel. It's not a redirect or it's a propel, right? Like that's yep. The overarching word.
It's terribly worded. And the italicized note should not be there. It should be included in the definition of
correct.
What your kicking motion is.
There was also a spelling mistake. There was a spelling mistake on the word motion in the rule.
It's a modio.
So, learn some AP style, buddy.
I don't think it's AP style to spell the word correctly. That's just writing.
Learn some AP style, buddy. It might be the biggest diss we've heard on the podcast. That is just brutal.
Did you even annotate?
That said, so like if you just look at the sink, like take the puck out of it, take the play out of it, and you take just the motion of the leg, it's hard to dispute that is quite literally a kicking motion, because that's how you kick something, is you extend your leg out. The word that trips everything up is propel, and it's the difference between redirect and propel. I personally think that should have counted for propel, because the word propel means that you push it into the net. You use the force of the motion to push something away is to propel it. Without the movement or the distinct kicking motion of the leg, the puck does not get pushed into the net. Now, you can make the argument that it was only redirected, but the redirection doesn't happen without the motion of the leg. And that's the tricky part. I thought it was a little like the evidence was a pretty damning in the moment, but they gave him the goal. And I think the other thing before I get into the second part of this equation, the thing that Minnesota State fans should probably realize is that it did not cost you the game. It costed you a better chance at winning the game, because even if they disallow the goal, it's still a two-goal game, and you can throw out every cliche about how the two-goal lead is the worst lead in hockey, yada yada yada, all of that, but there's a butterfly effect to that goal not going in, and the entire game plays out differently because Michigan Tech did outplay Minnesota State for most of that game. And so how differently does that game play out if it's a 1-0 scenario instead of a 1-1 scenario? So, but that all aside, then you have to go to the last one with the attempt to cover the puck. I have no clue what the right call should be in that. I think you can make the argument that he did cover the puck because his hand went down on it, went up. I think you can make the argument from that overhead shot that his hand never got the puck. I think he did try and cover the puck. I don't think that's really in question. In the moment, you saw his hands kind of wrap around that area and go to the ice. That is quite literally covering the puck. As someone who played goalie for 15 years,
it looks like he's trying right. quote unquote not to cover it in order to like, but he's trying to like grab it and shove it under Tracy's pads so right. nobody else can knock it in.
Right. So right. that, but the actual happenings of it are, you know, unless you have a microscope or a magnifying glass and you can somehow teleport yourself into Alex Tracy's eyes in that situation, like the actual happenstance of where the puck was still feels like it's up for debate to me because the overhead angle made it a little bit more unclear of where the puck actually was. That being said, because Minnesota State didn't have their challenge or their timeout, correct? It changes the whole course of should you challenge that play because because it was called a penalty shot on the ice, now you need indisputable evidence that it's not a penalty shot. And if you're Luke Strand sitting on that bench, that maybe you feel like you got hosed on the previous challenge, you're already on the penalty kill. You already have to face a penalty shot. Now it's a penalty shot, a 5-on-3 for a minute 20 and another 5-on-4 for another 40 seconds after that. If you're wrong. And
you're up one, so you have a better shot at surviving all of this tide without losing a challenge, right? Like,
correct. Right. But you're basically like stacking the deck against your players if you go in there and challenge it and you lose it again. So
yeah,
that's
because other than the fact that Michigan Tech actually has to score the goal,
right?
You're somewhat handing the ability to take the lead to Michigan Tech,
correct?
By challenging if you're wrong. Yeah.
Another part of this that, like, from the Minnesota State side that I don't understand the outrage is who should take the penalty shot. Who cares?
If it's a penalty against the player has to take it, I believe, right? That's right, the rule. But in this case, it's like not, that. Right? Yeah, this is separate. Right. It's anybody the captain wants.
Right. And, like, the...
Well, isn't there two different parts of the, like, I did not do a whole ton of research on this, but isn't... Somewhere there's a rule in the rule book that says it has to be somebody on the ice, and somewhere else it said anywhere that anybody that's not ejected or in the penalty box at the time. And I don't know which one applies in this case.
I did look it up either, and I didn't find the difference in that. So I copy and pasted a bunch of the rule book on a document for this. So, of course, that was the part I did not copy and paste onto the document. Yeah. So minus one for me on this one, but I don't care who takes the penalty shot, because even if it is just anyone on the ice, you're on the power play. Like, if you don't have a goal scorer on your power play, like, what the hell are you doing? Like, yeah. So you're gonna have someone who's capable of taking a penalty shot, and the fact that it went to Logan, it doesn't bother me one bit. But I think one thing that I haven't really seen anything on Twitter or even in a Discord is how quick the ruling was that it should have been a penalty shot was a little bizarre to me. And I'm not trying to insinuate anything or imply anything with it, but that ref went in there with the most confidence.
Well, he was exactly where he needs to be for that play, right? And he is on the back of the net watching down over top of it.
Yeah,
exactly where he needs to be to make the call he made. I don't think
from his angle, I don't think you can blame him, because it's blatantly obvious what the intentions of number 18 is. It's to reach down and grab the puck. Now, maybe he failed to actually execute that, but that's blocked by Tracy's pad. But like, I think it's clear what the intent was, so it makes sense that as soon as he loses sight of the puck and it doesn't like squirt out below Tracy's skate or something, that what the intention was and why he called it, like, it makes sense.
So here's where I kind of get a little like, I don't know fully the operating procedure of how this would happen if there's not a coach's challenge, because I think there are situations where you can review stuff that isn't coach's challenged, right? Or the coaches.
This is on the list of things that can only be reviewed by a coach's challenge.
Okay, that changes, because I was thinking in the moment, if you make that immediately penalty shot call, now you have to overturn that with inconclusive evidence. Whereas maybe instead of jumping to the penalty shot, the refs can convene, then they can look at it, see what it is, and then come up with a call from there. But if that's not an option, then I understand why the call was made in the way that it was. And to still go back to it, I don't know if there is a clear answer. Like, if you objectively show that video of what the call should be to 10 different people, I think you get five people saying one thing, five people saying another thing. But that's just the nature of sports. And so there has to be a call on the ice. That was the call on the ice. But because of the works challenge, now you don't have an opportune time to challenge it. You can still challenge that if you're stranded, and maybe you get a little lucky and it goes your way. But based on what's happened in that game, where the other one did look so cut and dry that he kicked the puck into the net, what gives you any confidence that you're going to challenge that and win it? And now you're 4.5 minutes left in a game and you got to go on a 5-on-3 and stop a penalty shot. So that's where it gets tough. But to go back to what you said, where you said intent, that I think is another really interesting word in this equation, because like the intent for Jack works. I don't necessarily think he intended to kick the puck in the net. I think he was trying to make a hockey play, maybe even just cut down the puck, corral it a little bit with a skate and get a shot off, because he was tied up with the defender.
Oh, I'm pretty sure on the broadcast he said or post game or at some point he said I don't think he was trying to kick it, but he was trying to do what he did without kicking it, right?
Wait, he said he was trying to redirect it into the net, or essentially
that's what it sounded like, didn't it? Did you guys hear that?
I haven't heard that. No,
oh, you were there. Dustin, yeah, or
I immediately, as soon as that puck went in live, I was like, it's getting reviewed. He kicked it. Even from where we were standing, like, that's a kick. Live reaction was no goal.
Yeah.
Before we saw
it. And that was my initial reaction as soon as they showed the replay too. Like, and I know I have argued the other side plenty on Twitter and argued plenty in Discord. And I feel like all I'm trying to do is try to explain what I think the ref's intentions were in the call. I don't know if it's what it is or not, but you go look at like videos of like reviews of this in NHL games, and it doesn't look like Jack Works does a whole lot different than what some goals in the NHL are called a goal.
It's not the big wind up and scoop the puck style kick that gets called really obviously, right?
Yeah,
it's not that style of kick. And I think that's the intent of the rule, is to not allow those kind of kicks.
And it does seem like, for the most part, the kick rule, like, he's kind of trying, like, I don't know. It's so hard. Because I know the thing that I pointed out a lot on the internet since this happened was, it really does look like, if you slow down the video, that around the time he contacts the puck, his foot is changing directions. It's no longer going towards the contact. It's going towards the net. So it's more about him getting to the spot and pushing his toe towards the right post from his angle to get his foot in the right place to deflect it. So if that's actually what happened, then it should be a goal, because he's not propelling it anymore. He's just getting his foot in the way of it. And the video I have is not good enough. I was actually going to try and like break down like how fast the puck was moving before it hit his skate and after. And I just could not do it because the frame rate of the video Rob sent me was not good enough to pull that off.
Sorry, that was a screen cap off my phone while we were arguing.
Yeah, I can try and maybe do it some other time.
Here's another part of this too, that I want to go back to, that where, again, it goes back to the word intent. If his intent was to essentially kick the puck in legally, that is, in another way, somewhat bending the rules for that scenario. Like, we're trying to find a black and white answer to a gray situation. That's what this feels.
I honestly think the rules should just be rewritten to, it doesn't matter if it comes off a skate.
100%.
That, like, there's no reason for this to be this complicated.
Well, I do agree that if there's a little scrum at the top of the crease and there's a rebound of 6 inches in front of the goalie, that you cannot literally kick sure, the puck the blue, in when it's moving blue, a different direction, right?
That's what the blue paint is for, and protecting the goalie. I have no problem with
no,
that.
No, but even if it's like a foot and a half outside of that, and you're in a scrum and you can't get your stick there, so you just kick it, like, you can't do that.
I actually don't mind.
You don't?
No, I don't. Like, if you're able to, like, yeah, like, hit it off your ass in the net, like, or you can elbow it. Like, if you're on your back and you can elbow the puck into the net, like,
I want to see more headers, baby. I think that'd be sweet. just have your defenseman rip it off the glass.
I think as
and
long
header
as you
it
don't,
in, we're
like,
good to go.
I think as long as you don't, like, swing at the puck with an open hand into the opposing net, not your own net.
Let me screen share, Tim. Like, I'll play it right now.
If you swing at the puck, well, but if you swat the puck in your own net with your own hand, then congrats, you just lost the Mason Cup semifinal. But if you do it into the other net, like, that shouldn't be allowed. I think that is, like, the only thing that I don't necessarily want to be allowed.
The utter contempt for referees, period. Like, there is so much hate for them.
We can't even handle 3 minutes in our Discord without people bitching about it. So
yeah, but I mean, it's all over social media for everything. I mean, Dustin shared that, and there's lots of questionable calls, but, like, how many mistakes have players and coaches made, and what's, like, we're all freaking human. They're going to make mistakes. I get that the video replay seems conclusive to some respect. And I did try to reach out to, I went through Perry to try and talk to Marco to see what he would tell us, maybe explaining, like, the, like you said, Jared, like, understanding the process of what they're looking for on these things that should be more black and white than they are, right? Like, whether or not it's a kick should be a pretty black and white thing, but the way they wrote the rules, it's kind of not. And, like, and I know I said in our Discord, like, I think what Jack Quirks did should be a goal. I'm just not sure if it is by the rules.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, that's how I feel as well.
I agree.
I personally feel like kicking is so hard when you're on skates already, then who cares if you have the ability to kick the puck in the net? I think that's neat.
Fibke Dental is a general dentistry practice located in downtown Rhinelander, Wisconsin, home of the Hodag. Look online at FibkeDental.com or find them on Facebook. They do pain-free dentistry for kids, adults, people that went to great schools, and people that ended up at Northern Michigan. Stop in and say hi between 8 and 5 and tell them THG sent you. That is FibkeDental.com.
We fund everything a Tech Hockey Guide from listeners like you. You can show your support by becoming a patron at patreon.com/techhockeyguide. Whether you're interested in question priority, access to patron-only Zoom chats with coaches and players, in-stat deep dives, extended versions of the podcast, unedited video or audio, early access, or commercial-free listening, there's a level for you. We also now have 15% discounts off annual memberships with tiers ranging from $2 to $50 per month. Again, sign up at patreon.com/techhockeyguide.
But yeah, the way his foot moves, I can't not call that a kick in good faith.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe, like I said, part of that to me is playing soccer, and that, like, that's a normal, like, kicking motion you do for a goal. Like, that is maybe my interpretation of the word kick is different than other people's, I guess. But
yeah,
I don't know. He's kicking out to make that play happen.
If this was like a Cato Hockey Guide podcast, this would be an entirely different conversation.
I mean, I'm very calmly taking the other side. Like I said, I'm glad we got it. I don't think we got screwed.
To me, so much of this, probably the reason that I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think I said online, like, I was really happy that I wasn't digging into the rules to the extent that we just have. Because, like, it went our way, so I don't really have to care to that level. Like, so much of it to me just feels like maybe the ref got it wrong. More than likely he did. But I don't really give a shit because it's about time it went our way.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I was in Mankato for last year's insanity, so I am completely fine with this year's insanity and Houghton going our way.
I mean, the bottom line for me is, like, just the way this went down in general, like, even – Like you know, I don't think we haven't even talked about the next goal yet. Jesus Christ on a bicycle. You know, like
that's just all but, we have to do for no, that is but, play Yakety Sax and the conversation is done.
Yeah, but one, like, yeah. You know, I genuinely in my heart of hearts want to feel bad for a team that loses a game off of a weird bounce off of a stanchion. Defenseman makes the, you know, in a vacuum, he's making the right play to try to get that puck and put it down. But then he whacks it off the goalie's head and in the net. I want to feel bad for that team. But the problem is we've been on the other side of that so much that I just don't. I feel like it's okay, cool. Now we get ours.
I have something to add on to that because I agree. Like, that's just sports, right? Like, sometimes they go your way, sometimes they don't. It doesn't matter what jersey you wear. Like, that's just sports. And and there are times where you don't get the benefit of the call, and there are sometimes where you do. As like the human element of it, though, like you look at like Alex Tracy, who played the way he did for three games, so, and you got to sit there for all that time. That sucks. And I don't remember what kid swatted it into his net, but like again, it's in the heat of the moment. He's trying to make a play to get it to overtime, and he ends up. You know, it's that part is tough. One other thing about the rest, I want to go back that Tim said, and this is where I start to get like annoyed with people just shitting on the refs. The people that say like, we need to hold these refs accountable. What the hell does that even mean? Like the ones that say like, well, like you see this all the time with,
cause
like,
it would really, really help if they publicly lambasted the referees as a league.
Right, yeah.
Like now, that would really help quiet people on the internet if they publicly trashed the referees.
Yeah, that's going to make more people want to sign up to be a ref.
It's a sad indictment of the state of how people treat refs that in every rink around the country right now, there's the yellow band campaign or yellow arm campaign to basically, you know, have don't treat them bad. It's their first year. They need to come back. How about you just treat them normal all the time, you jackasses?
Yeah, didn't you say something about you refereeing a soccer game and your dad yelling at somebody for yelling?
Oh,
like,
there's
being a jerk to you. Yeah,
yeah. There's that happens all the time. It's absurd. Yeah. I mean, you got kids that are reffing youth sports that are kids themselves, and you got parents that are waiting there to bite their heads off for rec sports. Like, people need to just calm their tits and realize it's not that. Well, it's a game.
And I'll circle back to, I think one of the best things Dustin and I ever did was drink with the refs. Because it humanizes them. They're not just some asshole on the rink.
And everybody thinks they're
my
out
team.
Yeah.
They're real people trying to be fair and honest to the rules.
Yeah.
And they're going to fail just like the rest of us fail at everything in our lives. Like,
right,
we all
talking
make
about,
mistakes.
We're talking about save percentage and the chances of a shot going in, yet the refs are expected to be 100% all the time. And otherwise, they're the worst thing ever that screwed your team.
And they're obviously not the greatest athletes in the world chasing a bunch of 20-year-olds around a rink, right? Like,
you see
it's
this,
hard.
You see the argument all the time, like especially in like NFL discourse, where they're like, there's a big blown call that can't be reviewed. And then you get the onslaught of people that are like, well, we need to hold the refs accountable. And then you get the people that are like, why shouldn't the refs have to do a press conference? Let me tell you, someone who does like 5 press conferences a week, if I had to sit there and ask a ref, hey, did you think you blew that call? And he'd go, yeah, I did. Or no, I didn't. What's the second part of that conversation?
Are you going to go home now and just be done reffing forever because you messed up once? No, there would be no sports without refs.
Is a Minnesota State fan going to get any more closure on it if a ref goes, hand up, I got it wrong? No, they're still pissed because they're done. They lost.
I will say one thing. I do have a feeling that if we did our research and polled people on who they thought should be refereeing a conference semifinal, Bruce Vida or Vida would not have made the list.
Probably not.
But I haven't. Part of the problem is I haven't done enough of the research this year to know which refs were even at the disposal of the CCHA, because a lot of the refs that ref CCHA games this year get assigned to the NCHC or the Big Ten when it comes to playoff time. So it would take a lot of work to figure out which refs were actually available to Marco to assign to this game, other than the 8 guys that refereed the quarterfinal playoff series. But beyond that, it's really hard to know who else was even at their disposal. One thing I did find interesting was that, if I'm not mistaken, the two refs that refed the Michigan Tech-Minnesota State game did not ref together the previous weekend. They were a different pairing, which I found odd because I know back in Marco's day of reffing, they seemed to do a pretty good job of trying to pair those guys together and kind of keep them together because they get comfortable with like where their lines are on calling things, and they're more, it feels like the games get more consistent when both refs get to work together more consistently. And I think we may have lost some of that this year. But I'm not complaining about Bruce in that way. I'm just saying I don't think you would consider him one of the four best refs in this ECHA to be put to refereeing that game.
You have to just like trust the fact that they did the best they could before this all played out. And yep. If this is like the worst option imaginable, that they wouldn't have done that like by choice.
Yeah.
Like it sucks. And the worst part is like, I'm sure he's probably a nice guy, but like if you're a ref and everybody knows your name before the game starts, that's a tough look.
Yeah. Cause I'm pretty sure. Was it Alex Micheletti complaining before the puck even dropped that Bruce was assigned to this game?
I saw multiple people complaining before the game.
Yeah. So
yeah, that to me is just sad, honestly.
Yeah, it is. It is. It really is.
You've got to complain about, and we have folks that do the same. Yep. It, to me, it's find something else to do with your time.
And that does go back to a lot of it, like,
for hours on a Monday night about hockey ourselves, but you know.
Yeah. Well, and then like, and I'm going to like, complain about Jay-Z a little bit, like the way he looks at refereeing feels wrong. Like,
yeah,
there is not be... there like a fairly ref game doesn't mean three penalties each.
Correct. There is
it can
no
be
way
six
that's
to true. One. It can be five mm-hmm. nothing. That can be what the game actually was, and we can feel unfair because some questionable calls didn't go our way. But if all five penalties against us were clearly penalties and all the questionable stuff didn't get called,
the ref did his job doing an XP or something like XG, expected penalties. That's the correct thing. But, yeah. You know,
but I'm
no
not
going
to take the time to
that.
Rewatch the game in that fashion to be like, well, how did miss that call? Like, and part of the problem we have as fans is I think we miss the questionable calls that didn't get called on our guys. We're not tallying those. We just pretend they didn't happen, but we're tallying every time we feel like we didn't get a call, and then complaining every time we get a call against us because that other call didn't go our way. And that's the biggest thing I've said multiple times on Twitter is like, you guys, like, I know it sucks to be on the losing end of what you thought was some major questionable calls. Like, these aren't like, and that's one of the things that we talked a ton about with the goalie interference last year is like, even on a penalty shot, the result of the play is not a goal, no goal. It's a chance at a goal or not a chance at a goal. Like, Tracy still has a chance to save it. But on a goalie interference, you're either putting a goal on the board or you're taking one off. And that's why it's such a controversial call, because it changes the scoreboard in itself. There's no chance to recover. Whereas everything else is a penalty. You still have a chance to kill off a 5-on-3. You still have a chance to kill off a major penalty, and you still have a chance to stop a penalty shot. So like I said, like for how good Michigan Tech has been at taking penalty shots this year, like the fact that that went in was a big deal. Like I would have just as much expected it to not go in.
Our two shootouts are in overtime are losses.
Yeah, for the conference anyway, right? Yeah. Like our one over our shootout win was
the,
in
the GLI is the one GLI. Win.
It yeah. didn't really count for other than fun for us. So I guess now is the time. Like, do we want to talk about the covering more, or we got that one covered and we just move on to the yakety sack goal?
Honestly, I think everyone, like anyone with even a remotely like takes a non-biased approach to it, just thinks it's still a call that should be up in the air. Like, if you have a definitive opinion on that, you are either a fan of either team or a lunatic. So It is what it is. The call on the ice was going to determine pretty much the end result of that. And the call on the ice was made by the official closest to it behind the net. He went with his gut, and that's just sports. It's the same with a strike call. It's the same with a pass interference call. It's the same with a travel. Like, that's just sports.
Yep. And honestly, how, like, it feels like that part of it, I think, for the fans on either side of this one is, I feel like this happens more often than it actually is called, right? Like, or at least, I don't know. It feels like I thought there was even somebody pointing out that, like, this call had happened and gone the other way earlier this year, so that somebody was very surprised that this one was called that way. But obviously, they're different refs, and regardless of what we can see in the overhead camera, the ref has a different view than what we have. And I don't know. So much of it, I think, for the ref, like I said, revolved around the obvious intent of the player. Like, his intention was to cover the puck to save his team. And he might have failed at that, but it was very clear what his intention was. And at least from the ref's view, it probably looked like he succeeded. And that's why he called it. So the Yakety Sax goal, I didn't even see it live. I was looking at my phone, assuming we were going to overtime. And all of a sudden I look up, and because Dirk gets excited, and Dirk talked about that on the show this morning about watching back the goals and kind of laughing at everybody's reaction, because it seemed like a lot of other people were just like, well, it's going to go to overtime. And they weren't probably paying as much intently attention as they should have because of that, the way that moment was.
So this one's the exact opposite of the work school. It's on the far end of the ice from where my parents' seats are. I had no idea what the hell happened.
Yeah.
We're like, why are they? It just went off the boards. Why are they celebrating? How did that? What the hell? And until the actual the replay went on the board, I had no clue how that had managed to make its way on the ice or in the net. It was just ridiculous.
I got a question for you guys. If, say, that doesn't go in and you go to overtime, how confident are you in Tech winning that game in overtime?
No, I'm not. Because of the fact that...
Do I think they have the advantage? Yes. Do I think they would have actually won? I have zero confidence. Here,
let me readjust my answer, because I forgot. We don't play stupid overtime. This is real overtime.
Yeah.
Real overtime, I think we have a better chance. We go 3-on-3 overtime, I think Tech loses.
I'm the exact opposite way. I think if it was a 3-on-3, I would feel a lot more confident. They did pretty good on 3-on-3 this year.
They have, but the skill play of some of the higher-end Minnesota guys, the way that
You're thinking boogeyman.
The way that's
not the
actually,
same team.
Oh, I think the top-end guys
for Minnesota State, you take their top three, the snipes that they had, the quality Sutter goals they had.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a rough go.
See,
if we play 5-on-5, I think we have a really good chance.
I think, like, now this might be the most obvious statement ever, but if that goes to overtime, it feels like a true coin flip, because it felt like Minnesota State was playing to get to overtime. Like, they were trying to survive the last, well, however many minutes, 4.5 minutes of that game, get it tied, get a reset, go to the locker room, just completely calm down from the moment of that game. And then regroup and just lean on those stars and trying. The longer that overtime would have went, I think the more it would have favored Tech. But just give yourselves a chance to reset from whatever the hell happened in the last 5 minutes. And they were 9.5 seconds away from getting that chance.
Yeah. And that was an interesting point that I think Shane Frederick posted, was about how, like, yeah, those, like, the kick goal went against us, but we never, like, every time we got a lead, we didn't extend it. Like, they never tried to separate. They never were able to separate more than a goal, and it just stayed that way the whole time. Like, you just let Tech hang around and let fluky things actually impact the result. It, like, from their perspective, it obviously sucks that all of the major things went against them. Other than the fact that, like, the one thing that keeps this game for me, like, from, like, making up for all the stupid crap that has happened at, like, regional games over the years, is the fact that it isn't a regional game. Or, like,
yeah,
like the Notre Dame game and the St. Cloud game, like, all those stupid things that happened to result in Tech losing those games, like, this game kind of makes up for that because it was important, but it's not going to ultimately make up for it unless they win Friday and find a way to upset one of the big four, depending on how that plays out. All right, should we wrap it up?
Let's do it.
1 minute remaining in the podcast.
Well, that should do it for this episode of the Chasing McNaughton podcast. Please check out our Patreon and join by visiting patreon.com/tech hockey guide. Patrons at the white level or above receive question priority. Patrons at the black level or above receive access to extra podcast content, including extended versions of every podcast. We've got about 5 levels, and one of the biggest differences is each level you get access to the podcast sooner. So the highest level gets the raw audio of this file about as soon as I get done processing it and get it up on the site on Monday nights, typically. Those of you that pay for the gold level get the YouTube video, which is also typically unedited, on Tuesday mornings. And then now I usually drop the black version, which is like the extended podcast but edited, as soon as I'm done editing on Tuesday night. And then because the first half of the public podcast drops Wednesday morning. I think this week we're probably going to drop them Wednesday, Thursday, so you've got a little time to listen before the game on Friday, as we lead into that. So yeah, if you've let's see, follow us on Twitter at Chasing Mac Pod or at Tech Hockey Guide. You can submit questions through Twitter, Facebook, and our Patreon page if I remember to ask you guys for questions. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find the podcast on your site of choice, please let us know and we'll make it happen. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Fibke Dental in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, Arcadia Insurance servicing the Midwest, and Livonia Technical Services. Finally, thanks to the thank you notes for all the bumpers in this week's episode. If you like what you hear, check them out at thethankyounotes.bandcamp.com.
You've been listening to the Chasing McNaughton podcast, presented by Tech Hockey Guide, covering the Michigan Tech Huskies and the CCHA.